Okay, I think we're on the air now. This is a very strange day at what Mike likes to call Mulvey International Studios. It is 93 degrees out there in the Tacoma area, and the studio is basically wrapped in insulation to keep the sound under control, which means this is going to be a day where I come in here, sweat half a gallon, and smell like dusty cold cuts. But thanks to Robert here, we have an air conditioner, and we're surviving to do another show another day. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. My name is Sam. I've got people who have been on the show before, but never as you know, hosts for the full hour. And I'm really looking forward to this. Robert, how you doing?
I am great, Sam. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Robert is on the board of directors of Humanists of Washington. He's the president of Humanists of North Puget Sound. And you were we had you on the show because you did the humanist invocation at Oak Harbor.
Right.
Yeah, which was great because the next day somebody had to correct us. Yes. I love that. And then Bridget, who you guys might know as the person who did our ASL interpretation all those years ago, but now you get to hear her voice. How you doing today?
I'm talking now. I'm good. I'm a little nervous because I'm a lot more comfortable with my hands than my voice, but yay!
I really don't think there's going to be a problem here. Okay. So last week, a few weeks ago, we told a story about, apparently there's a movie coming out about North Korea. So we gotta talk about it. It has been revealed that North Korea's UN ambassador, Jo Sung-nam, has complained to the United Nations about the comedic film The Interview, accusing the United States of sponsoring terrorism and committing an act of war by allowing production of a movie about a plot to kill its leader, Kim Jong-un. The ambassador demanded that U.S. authorities take immediate and appropriate actions to ban the production and distribution of the film, lest it be fully responsible for sponsoring terrorism. The newly released letter confirms reports from late June that the executive director for the Center of North Korea U.S. Peace, based in Tokyo, which is related to the Korean Friendship Association, stuff like that.
I think they need to get a better sense of humor. I mean, really?
Well, totalitarian nations, not necessarily known for their humor.
Seth Rogen.
Not everybody gets Seth Rogen's comedy, though.
Well, that's true.
And I'm one of those people, but still, at least I'm not going to call him a terrorist.
Yeah. Imagine a totalitarian regime with a sense of humor.
Oh, that would be
awesome.
Yeah, look, it's the Turkmenistan Mel Brooks Film Festival. Ah, man.
But this is indicative of everything that these totalitarian regimes do, is they find something that speaks ill of them, and then they just...
Right.
Crack down on it. It's like, we can't have that.
What I really like about stories like this one, well, one is, we said before, people were saying that North Korea was going to declare war, or that this was actually a plot to assassinate the president, the king of North Korea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what we said is, it's really hard to have a smell test for stories about North Korea,
right?
Because North Korea, yes, dear leaders, yes, North Korea is really creepy and does stuff like this. And here's proof of that.
Yeah.
They were just a couple weeks late.
Right.
But then there's also a little glimpse into the way they think.
Uh-huh.
They think that the White House dictates movies.
Right.
Right.
They don't. But in North Korea,
they do.
We're getting a little bit of projection there then.
Because we know that they do. Yeah.
And they're saying, well, you must do it too because we do it.
Because everything that happens in North Korea or North Korea's interface with the rest of the world, as small as it is a tool of the state and is stage managed by Pyongyang. Their expectation is that's the same everywhere else.
Right.
That's kooky.
Yeah.
Well, and again, that's just the way those types of regimes operate. They don't really know any other mode of operation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's once again, you know, I love talking about North Korea's weird because it's this little frozen in time thing. But once again, I have to say, the thing that fuels North Korea is basically human misery. And that's
right.
One of the reasons. That's also a reason I pay attention to
it.
Because
pretty much everything I see coming out of North Korea just pretty much makes me angry.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. Yeah.
So speaking of human misery, a Colorado politician has suggested that an exorcism could be just what an atheist needs to remedy their hatred of Jesus Christ. Gordon Klingenschmidt, Republican candidate for the Colorado State House of Representatives, proposed that atheists undergo an exorcism to rid themselves of the devil so that they would feel comfortable entering a church. His comments came in response to the Supreme Court's decision not to hear a case involving a Wisconsin school district's desire to hold graduation ceremonies in a local church. In 2012, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the district, declaring that such events convey an impermissible message of endorsement. First thing, I'm glad they did that. Because last week, if we did this story last week, I just wouldn't have believed it.
Right, right, yeah.
You know,
yeah, I agree.
The other thing is, we have called Representative Gordon Klingenschmitt, and I have volunteered to be exorcised.
That's awesome.
If he would like to do that. You know, I maybe here, maybe there. I just like back in the day when Bill Donahue was saying, oh, Catholics should invite atheists over and make them Catholics. Okay, you know what? If I'm not confident in what I believe and what I do, then I should be afraid of that. I'm not.
No.
So here we go. And I think it's, oh man, it'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
That would be funny to watch, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I make no bones about it. I you know, I'm doing this for the laughs. I'm not expecting anything to come of it, clearly.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But isn't it, like, didn't they stop doing exorcisms ages ago?
Because the Pope just recently said exorcisms are okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I must have missed that one.
Yeah, just like last week.
Yeah, the Pope.
I think I remember my grandmother once telling me that, no, we don't do that anymore, but, you know.
Well, I imagine there are a lot of Christians out there because Christians understand, you know, most religious people get this, that exorcisms are creepy and they're about this supernatural world that doesn't exist. And, you know, they're thinking that, you know, it makes sense. Exorcisms made sense when you didn't have psychology and you didn't know about the concept of mental illness. And you thought somebody who was creepy was invested by the power of Satan, you know. And now it's a little different.
Yeah.
But I want to see what it's. I want to go through one.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Who wouldn't?
I totally want to be exorcised. Yeah. Exorcised. I'm not a big fan of exorcised.
Well.
No.
But there's something. There's again, much like with North Korea, there's an assumption hiding in here, and that's what we were talking about, which is the concept that atheists are afraid to be in a church.
Right. The last time I was in a church, it was a pretty miserable experience. I mean, funerals are never fun for anybody, but, like, I went to my niece's dedication or whatever, and nobody made me feel weird. Nobody, like, I wasn't uncomfortable there, but, if I were in a room full of, like, crucifixes and propaganda, I wouldn't want to be there. It's not the building itself that's the problem. It's the people that create the atmosphere of the building that makes it become the problem.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. It's certainly not the building that makes it the issue. Like, last time I was in a church was, I think, when I got married.
Right.
Which was a number of years ago. I wasn't uncomfortable because it was church. I was scared of my mind because I'm getting married.
Yeah.
So,
but, getting married is scary.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Hi, Becky.
It's not scary at all.
So,
but it's like she's saying, it's not the church, it's the message. And it's when we see those things on a wall, we are definitely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, when we're seeing those things on a wall in a place they're not supposed to be.
Right.
And a high school graduation for a public school is exactly the place they're not supposed to
be. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like going into churches because these are private, these are meaningful spaces to other people. And not only do I not share their beliefs, I think their beliefs are kind of silly.
Yeah.
And kind of, and so I feel like me being there might be an insult to them. It's like I get sort of the feeling that maybe I was standing in the bathroom with them while they're going to the bathroom and I'm laughing at them. So I don't go into the bathroom with them. I do what any sane American does, which is watch videos of it on YouTube.
Yes.
Right. Oh, God.
No, this is a thing, and it goes right straight into our interview. The concept of religious belief is interesting to me because I want to know. I mean, not only is it alien to me and I want to understand other people, but it's, in a way, it's kind of tactical data.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and it's one of those things like I have a hard time controlling my facial expressions because of my use of them in sign language. And so when I go into a building, I know I'm going to offend somebody because I can't control that facial expression of going, oh my God, really? You actually believe this? Really?
Yeah. That's part of a problem with me, too, especially now that I do kind of do this for a living. Well, not to suggest I make money off of it, but this is what I do. Nowadays, if somebody starts talking about religion, I can't, you know, as if I'm a believer, I can't help but make a face like I just bit into something bad.
I get that all the time, especially in places that don't necessarily know that I'm an atheist.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, oh, I shouldn't make that face, but, you know, it's going to come out. Your eyes are going to squint. Like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm of two minds of it. It's like, I don't want to have to face that on a day-to-day basis, but as an activist, I feel like I need to have some sort of experience with it so that I don't insist myself around other people who believe as I do, and I start getting this delusional idea of what the world is like.
Right. Yeah.
That's a weird one.
Yeah. Well, I try not to completely isolate myself into the secular community, but it is so much more fun that way.
It really is, yeah. You know, I've always had this perspective of, like, surrounding myself with people that of various belief systems from all over the world, because I learn more from them. But at the same time, like, how much am I going to learn about a doctrine that I grew up in from people that I don't actually like very much?
Well, and there comes a point where you're like, you don't want to... you just don't want to pick up the hatchet and go after them because you're so mad at these people because of what they're saying. So,
And maybe it's not an appropriate time. Like, I was recently at a wedding and of sort of acquaintance, really. But it was like somebody asked me, you know, where do you go to church? Because this was in the Midwest and that's a common question. And I'm not used to that. And I sort of stumbled over it and I was like, I don't know how to answer this.
it's a question. It's a very common question in some parts of the Midwest.
Yeah.
In the parts of the Midwest where I grew up, it wasn't that common.
Yeah, this was sort of rural.
Yeah, so. Either because of the assumption that you were a Lutheran.
Yeah.
Because everybody's a Lutheran in the Midwest. Or because, which is definitely true in the Chicago area, or at least it was for me growing up, that religion was inherently a private thing and you don't really broadcast it, which I think is a fairly good way to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I even had a situation a few weeks ago at a wedding that I was doing. I ran into someone that I work with there. And he had no idea of my secular activities. And he's like, what are you doing here? I was like, well, I'm officiating because they asked for a specific type of officiant. And they said, well, what denomination? And he's like, well, I'm a humanist. He's like, oh. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Well, there's different types of O's. Is this, I'm a humanist. Oh. I'm a humanist. Oh.
Well, it was almost, I don't really know what that is, but it must not be good, kind of. Oh, because I've never heard of it.
Yeah,
I've never heard of it, so it must be Satan worship. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I really am looking forward to these to getting exorcised.
That should be fun.
I think that would be a fun episode.
Yeah,
maybe.
We should definitely film it.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah.
I think we should live stream it.
Yeah. Totally.
That way. Well, live streaming it would make sense because if an evil spirit does leave my body,
right,
that's proof. Jingleheimer Schmidt is going to really want.
Maybe
Google Hangout that or something.
Yeah,
like
so.
That.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to am I expecting a phone call? No, not really. That's not how these things work, but it would be a lot of fun. Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back after the break, we're going to visit an old friend, and that would be Harold Camping with a guy who did a documentary about him in the time that all of that stuff was going down in 2011.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Yay, it's the 8-bit theme.
Yay.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. Yay, about 3 years ago now, something went down that really put us on the map.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't what I was expecting. I mean, we heard about this Herald camping stuff, and Mike thought it would turn into a great bit. And so we started something called Countdown to Backpedaling.
Right.
And I thought that would be a fun party, you know, the rapture party. So so yeah. We had what I thought was going to be a small party at an arcade. We would just, us and our friends, go, hey, into the world.
<We're still>
And then I was interviewed by Reuters, and the BBC picked it up. And I was like, and yeah, and it was a big thing for us. It was really what made us realize as a group that we were doing, you know, that we were in doing media stuff now. The guy we're talking to today is Zeke Bystrup, and he's a filmmaker, TV host, and a DJ from the Los Angeles area. He is a director of Apocalypse Later, a documentary about late radio preacher Harold Camping, who claimed the Bible guaranteed the second coming of Jesus on May 21st, 2011. He was the only guy to get really kind of close to the guy. How you doing today, Zeke?
Sam, we're all just riding Harold's wave, right?
Yeah. All right. So before we get into the documentary, though, I got a question for you. I've heard you described as an atheist who's down with Jesus. And I kind of wonder at that because, because I was talking about in the first segment, I have a love of propaganda. I actually collect Christian propaganda and sort of read it and study it. And I'm kind of wondering sort of what's your interface here?
Yeah, I think you'd qualify, and that quote is always shortened because the second part of that is, you know, I'm also down with Lenny Bruce or Harry Nielsen, Jock Tati, I love, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm down with Jesus, but I'm down with a lot of people. I find inspiration in some of his stuff, like you can get inspired by all different sorts of folks.
Sure.
Okay.
So, Apocalypse Later, this documentary, how did you manage to land this? You were the guy recording this, you know, it's really clear in the documentary, every day leading up to the day that was supposed to end all days, and then a couple days after. How did you manage to land that?
Yeah, I was pretty much in heaven right there, because one of the bizarre parts about getting heavy into biblical scholarship, which I got into about 10 years ago, is that I started to watch a lot of Christian television, listen to a lot of Christian radio. My dad, back in the day, used to watch you know, Jimmy Swaggart and all those guys, and they would send VHS tapes, you know, uncle to uncle, watching different episodes. So, yeah, I just got really into Harold Camping a long time ago, and so when I heard he was saying the end was going to come, I thought, you know, I got to be there. And I sent them an email, and at first they said yes, then they said no, because they thought about it, you know, tsunamis would kill the post-production, why make DVDs? But I pitched them on doing daily countdown videos. So what I did was, in mid-April, I went up there, I shot for an afternoon, I got an interview with them, I edited all night, I gave the clip to my music guy in Florida and posted it by the next morning. And I said, this is what I can do. I can do these videos, you know, he'll talk, and it'll be like the daily message, and we'll count down the last days, almost in real time, of a doomsday group, essentially. And it was super exciting, but I always knew the film is what the end product I wanted to be.
Right.
So when you were producing the countdown videos and getting them up online, were you afraid that people would take it as you personally endorsing what Harold Camping was saying?
Yeah, I even had that, you know, personal struggle at times. Am I helping a cult leader hone his message, right? Am I responsible if something happens? And I think what answered with that was the, at least, you know, in my mind, we did a video for day 10 that I thought was going to get us fired, because I thought, this is just outlandish. And they told us, you know, that is our favorite video. And so what I realized was, as long as I, you know, did a good job of just showing exactly what he believed, you know, if you watch the video, then if you didn't like Harold before, you're not going to like him after. But if you like Harold before, you probably like him after, too. So, yeah, it was kind of a social experiment there. And it just kept rolling.
Yeah, I felt like a lot of sympathy for his family in watching the documentary. Like, he just comes across as sort of a confused, delusional old man. But then his family and all of his followers get sort of swept up in that. Like, did you have conversations with his congregation and his followers about what they were thinking that you didn't get to put in the documentary?
Well, I think, you know, his wife, for one, they're obviously, you know, you can read subtle little comments, because I don't think she would ever say, oh, you know, Harold, you're wrong. She just said, you know, when the stuff in her trunk, she was trying to get someone to empty the stuff in her trunk, right? And the guy says, well, it doesn't matter anyway, you know, trunk's going to burn up with all the stuff. And so she sat and thought about it for a second. She's like, you know what? You're right. It's not that important. Right? Meaning at this time, with all this hoopla going on, it's not that important. Right. So I think, yeah, maybe he learned to live a little bit like that of, you know, is this that important? Because, yeah, I don't think Shirley, his own wife, thinks the end was coming.
And the thing is, this was a guy with a track record. In 1994, he made a similar prediction, and that obviously didn't happen. But I sort of wonder.
Yeah, so who's going to know you more than your wife, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Harold was, you know, called a serial predictor by this guy Matt, who is one of the producers for Family Radio, because, you know, so he'd been with Harold forever.
Yeah.
And he was claiming Harold had made, you know, 20 such predictions. So, you know, it brings to light the fact that Harold hit it perfectly this time in terms of a slow news week. You know, there was no Arab Spring yet, you know, and the media's always got to have something they got to sink their teeth into. And apocalyptic stories, you know, 40% of Americans, 40 think Jesus is coming back by 2050.
Yeah. Although, so, I sort of wonder, okay, so maybe Harold Camping was a true believer. I sometimes have my questions, but I note that Family Radio is still a going concern. Was there a lot of stuff, like, maybe behind Camping's back that was like, okay, how do we exist as an entity once this prediction fails? Was there any thinking about that, or were they just bound and determined to make to hit May 11th?
Well, I would say that, you know, and actually I'm taking this from Charles Sarno, who's a professor up there in the San Francisco area. Sorry, San Francisco, that's below you guys, though.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, writing a book, and he's been sending me these chapters. And so the stuff that I still learn that's not really in my film, but he said that he, in his estimates, that only a quarter of Family Radio probably bought into May 21 that were working there. And Harold was used to working with people that he disagreed with theologically. And I think he even told the story in front of me once to kind of illustrate the story, you know, about me, because he knew I was a non-believer. And he just talked about how people would come in and do their job. You know, the Lord would bring them in and they do their job and then they go on their way.
Right.
I think if you're a combative dude theologically, like Harold is, you got to get used to that, you know, because it's hard. Fundamentalists usually don't have churches. Usually they exist, in, you know, on the fringes or inside a church, but it's hard to be a fundamentalist and get people together.
So my biggest question about this is the aftermath of this. There were so many people who gave away everything they had, and they devoted their entire lives to this. They bought vans, and they went running around saying that the end is coming, the end is coming. Was there ever any apology from the family radio when it didn't happen and these people's lives were ruined?
Well, I know Harold issued an apology. That's, you know, the gist was basically, sorry for saying that people who didn't believe in May 21st were not saved. Right. Which is unusual in terms of apocalyptic predictions and their charismatic folk who throw them down to hear an apology. A lot of people's lives are ruined for sure. And, you know, I don't try to lose sight of that, even though I have admiration for Harold and for what he achieved in his life and from where he came from. His story arc is really that of a great American, you know, a son of poor farming immigrant parents, graduates from Berkeley at a young age, starts a successful and sells a construction business, builds family radio into a worldwide ministry. So right. If you looked at that arc, you know, until the sort of the end of it, it was really amazing. And he was a hardworking man, you know, 89 when all this stuff was going down, you know, doing open forum 7 nights a week. He had Bible study twice a week. He had this Alameda service on Sunday, an 89-year-old man trucking through this. And I'm just trying to keep up with him. So, you know, I think Harold had a lot of admirable qualities. I think this idea that the end is, I don't think Harold invented that. I think it's, you know, America is fertile ground for this idea. You know, the Scofield Reference Bible popularized
right.
the idea. And here we have now a nation of people who think everything has got to go into the crapper before Jesus returns and it all gets better.
Brings me to some criticism of this, and I bet you know where this is going. I do want to say right at the outset that this is criticism born of the efficacy of your documentary. I really enjoyed watching it. But I felt a touch of the whitewashing brush on when you approached Harold Camping, because I've seen this song and dance before. We were involved in a peripheral way in the run up to the end of the world, and there were people hurt. He did prey on 21st. He did prey on people. You know, you really, that one scene about money, the one scene you put in there, that was happening a lot more. And I kind of wondered what your positioning was there, because I'm not expecting you to make a documentary for the, you know, for people like us who think that he's, I think he's a monster, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I have to respect his work, because your story is right. But he preyed upon people, and I kind of wonder where your positioning was on that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely not making a film for you if you think he's, quote, a monster.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you think someone's a monster, you're never going to understand what their motivations are. You know, my role as a filmmaker is try to, you know, role of the observer, non-judgmental. And I think I do take a stand in my film in that I bring up the apocalyptic Jesus.
Right.
That's, to me, is the one part that was not talked about in the media. You know, people will bring up the Millerites. They can always talk about the kooky Millerites, but how far back does this predicting of the end go? And when you find out that most scholars, the dominant view is that it goes back to Jesus himself and Paul and John who baptized him,
right.
That this entire religion was birthed out of an apocalyptic excitement. So for me, that was the most important thing to bring up, rather than maligning Harold, which I think was done, you know, plentiful.
Okay.
Everywhere.
Right.
You know, I think people hated Harold, and the vitriol came most from evangelicals.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, But yeah, so, you know, I think I put that scene in there about money to yeah, that people's lives are ruined. But at the same time, apocalyptic groups, there is so much excitement that these people shared. I watched them. And what happens after it fails? What do? They go back and they recalculate, because that drug, that excitement of being a true believer, one of the chosen few, and here we are, we're going to witness the end. Here it comes. Well, there's a lot of joy and fun in that. You know, yes, people hopped on RVs and spent a lot of money.
That's where the terror comes in.
But they got to ride down the water slide, too.
Yeah, that's where the terror comes in for me. I understand that Harold Camping was an annihilationist, and to me, that's only slightly better, is that these people were being excited about the basically the end of billions of lives. And that...
Really,
that kind of worried.
Strange, you know, that excitement. That you know, it's almost like a death cult. You know, everybody's gonna die. Yeah,
exactly. And that's where the monster. That's where the monsterism comes in for me. You know, I've seen this song and dance before. I do appreciate that you made that point with the scholars, that Christianity is at its. It was apocalyptic out of the gate. When we started talking about this with Countdown to Backpedaling, one of the first things that we said on the show was, it's been the end times since the beginning times. And that is a really important point. Yeah, I wasn't expecting you to make a, you know, I wasn't expecting you to flush them down the toilet. I wasn't expecting you, but I felt like it was a little bit of a sugarcoating there. But.
Okay, well, hey, look, I'm just telling you, from my perspective, and especially doing the videos and seeing the amount of hate coming at Harold, it was exponentially larger than the crime. Even upon his death, the kind of messages I would get were like, good riddance and stuff of this sort. So to me, the more interesting question is, why that kind of reaction? Why do people feel so enraged by someone picking a date?
Right.
And so to me, that says more about who we are rather than it says about Harold.
Yeah.
And so to me, it was important to humanize Harold, because I did feel that you know, what was being aimed at him was not fair in terms of his position among this entire phenomenon.
Yeah, and that may be just the differences in values between us. And I understand the hate. I understand that he did get a lot of hate, because this is religion. People find this incredibly important. It's a very, like I said, this was
celebrate, though, right? Someone's finally giving you falsifiable information.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone else just sits on there on TBN and says, you know, when's the end coming? You know, when the Syrian crisis happens. And, you know, the TBN puts on all their prophecy experts.
That's a fair
point.
And
they try to nail them down. When's it happening? And, oh, it's happening soon. Harold gave his enemies the perfect ammunition.
Yeah, he did. And boy, and I will be right honest with you. Boy, did we use that ammunition. I mean, seriously. So as somebody who was a very outspoken critic of Harold Camping, what was the one thing that me and the public most misunderstood about the guy?
Well, I think most people thought he was a charlatan. And, you know, Harold, it was not about money at all. You know, that guy lived in the same house for 52 years. He built the house.
Yeah.
Married for 60-something years. You know, when I went to his place to interview him a year later after the, you know, the non-rapture, you know, there's duct tape holding the armrest together in the living room. You know, it was never about money for Harold. Now, I think you could make the argument that it was about attention, ego, those sorts of things.
Right.
And I think we're all guilty of that. I think you got to have a little ego to even want to get behind the mic, you know? Right? You got to have ego to want to make a film, you know?
Yeah.
So we're all guilty of that. I just think Harold, he was so kind to everyone he came across. You know, every day doing that show, he never lost patience with anybody on his staff. He was, you know, smiling. He was just a really nice guy who believed, like a lot of people believe, that the Bible is the word of God. Not just the word, the exact words of God dictated to human authors. And if it is so, then it's inerrant. And if it's inerrant, we can compare these disparate books and find little hidden meanings that are there. I just don't think Harold was that different. I don't think he was an extremist. I think he was actually quite normal in terms of the parameters of what it means to be an American.
So yeah, I really liked the video, and it thought it was pretty very well done. Can we expect to see more films like this, and what other projects do you have in the works similar to this?
Yeah, you know, I want to do my next one's about 70-80% shot, and I want to do it on fundamentalism, on evangelicalism.
Well, that should be fun.
That would be really interesting.
It's a really fantastic subject, and it's one I wanted to delve more into in this film, but then it becomes sort of a sidebar a little too long.
Right.
But, yeah, the name itself, fundamentalism, I'm sure as you guys know, it comes out of the 1920s or the 1910s, the five fundamentals. This is a recent invention. Yeah, so fundamentals would be a fun one. Just I need to find a little contemporary hook to carry that, you know, to ride that wave with Harold like we all did, you know?
Yeah.
What's the Harold for fundamentalism now? Well, that's the question
I'd actually like to pick your brain a little bit because, I mean, you know, people like us, Ask an Atheist, we would welcome a post-Christian world, and there are biblical scholars who are starting to talk about a post-Christian world. I'm under no illusions that apocalyptic thinking is going to go away if religion goes away. I see this apocalyptic thinking as a psychological thing.
No, you're totally right, and there's a book about secular apocalyptic groups. Earth First.
Yeah.
You know, they have this vision of the future. It's an environmental group. And there's a schism in Earth First on whether humans are part of that rebirth. You know, we pollute the planet so bad that the planet just eventually just regurgitates, right? Mm. And are we humans going to be part of that rebirth? So, yeah, apocalyptic thinking goes well beyond Judaism, Christianity. It goes into all religions, all sort of ideologies. Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I think we have a difference of opinion on Harold Camping himself. But one of the things that I think you really stuck the landing on this one, especially since I was following it. And then one of the moments in the documentary, it's, you know, after the date and you flash a date from 2012 on the screen. And I noticed, I'm like, oh, crap, that's post-stroke. This is going to be sad. And what was it like meeting Harold, like, before and after? And was there a fear there that you were going to dehumanize the man or something like that? It was a very strange moment.
Yeah, you know, I was really excited to get that interview. I wasn't sure if I needed that interview to make the film, but I think it is incredibly important to the film.
Yeah.
But, you know, by then I understood Harold, you know, he grew up a 5-point Calvinist, you know, the whole predestination stuff.
Right.
And so I think for someone like Harold, I knew he's never going to be like, oh my gosh, what have I done? It's more sort of thinking about, why did God put me through this? And, you know, that comes out in his answer. You know, God put him through it to show everybody that, you know, no man or organization can tell you when the end is, no matter how much they've studied the Bible. And that they also help get the message out there that there is a Bible with the whole billboard campaign.
Right.
So, yeah, I think for Harold coming up, growing up incredibly poor, you know, building this huge radio worldwide ministry, it would be very difficult to think that God was not showering blessings and praise on you your whole life.
Right.
So when something like this happens again, he gets tons of attention. Well, God obviously, you know, set this all up for me to get all this attention. Why am I getting this attention? Not what have I done, ever, I don't think. So personal responsibility is a difficult one when you're a predestination type cat.
So I'm really looking forward to this thing, to your next documentary on fundamentalism. If our listeners would like to keep track of what you're working on and what your next projects are, where would I send them?
15trucks.com. Okay. Also, I'm on Twitter. I'm at Harold_camping. I can't say my website at 15 Trucks is all up to date, but it will be one day. But, you know, I always announce what I'm doing next on there. So,
thank you,
Bill. I'm a PR team of one. The movie is in 100 million homes right now, and those 100 million aren't going to find it by magic. So I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. ApocalypseLaterDocumentary.com. If you're outside of the U.S. and Canada and you want to watch the film, that's where you can watch it. And yeah, it's on iTunes, Amazon. It's on your Xbox, PlayStation, Google Play. It's everywhere. So please find it and watch it and just... Thank you.
Zeke Peistrup is a filmmaker, TV host, and DJ from the Los Angeles area. He is the director of Apocalypse Later, a documentary about the late radio preacher Harold Camping, who predicted the end of the world on May 21st, 2011. Thank you very much. This was a really fun experience. I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, Sam. Becky, thank you. Had a great conversation. Enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you very much. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back after the break, we'll maybe answer some emails, and I think I want to disassemble this a little bit, I think.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to Ask an Atheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we've got some people to thank this week.
Yay, Peggy's Challenge.
Yes, I would like to thank James from Canoga Park, California, Rick from Elma, Washington, and Richard from Kent, the other Kent.
The other Kent.
The one in the UK.
The first
Yay,
Kent.
Richard.
Yes, thank you guys Kent. Very much. If you would like to keep the lights on here at Ask an Atheist, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the yellow button and participate in Peggy's Challenge, which is Peggy's Challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you send our way goes directly to programming like this. And speaking of programming that people like, Dan's out of town, but yeah. He's got a moment of science for us, and it's a fun one this week.
Recorded in New Jersey.
Yeah, recorded in New Jersey.
Today's moment of science will be the first in a two-part series on radiation. Radiation is a word that gets thrown around a lot in the news, on the internet, and even some of our favorite movies, but what exactly is radiation? What does it mean? Well, the word radiation can mean just about any spread of energy or matter from a single point in multiple directions. We talk about the radiation of diseases, the radiation of endangered species, and the radiation of heat or light. Of course, those aren't really what we want to talk about, although the radiation of heat and light is pretty darn close. Some of the things we think of when we talk about radiation are Chernobyl, microwaves, cancer therapy, mutant turtles, or something like that. But today, we're going to talk about ionizing radiation. There are several kinds of ionizing radiation, and they include ultraviolet light, which is made of high-energy photons, X-rays, which are even higher energy photons, and gamma rays, which are the highest energy photons that we know of. These three are all a part of the electromagnetic spectrum, just like visible light and the radio waves you're receiving this on. Photons of ultraviolet light are just barely energetic enough to cause excitation in some atomic bonds, which can result in damage to biological molecules like the proteins and the DNA that make up our cells. Small changes to DNA are usually corrected by our cells, but occasionally these changes can cause cell death or even cancer, so wear your sunscreen. X-ray and gamma radiation are similar, but are even more energetic, and as such are more likely to cause severe damage to our cells if we are overexposed. Overexposed is the key concept here, but more on that later. Other kinds of ionizing radiation include alpha radiation, beta radiation, and neutron radiation. Alpha particles are produced by nuclear decay and are composed of two protons and two neutrons. Because of their size, alpha particles have potential to do even more damage to our cells than gamma rays, but they tend not to penetrate very far. Most of them can't even make it through our outer layers of dead skin cells and are effectively harmless unless you breathe or swallow them. One source of alpha particles is radon gas, so if you live in an area that has radon, be sure to check your detector's batteries. Beta particles are a little different, and consist of a highly energetic electron that is ejected when a neutron decays into a proton. While they also have a potential for cellular damage, thin layers of metal or slightly thicker layers of plastic are enough to protect us from most alpha particles. Neutron radiation is just what it sounds like. Neutrons! Free neutrons are usually ejected during nuclear fission and can be found in nuclear explosions and in nuclear reactors. They're the only kind of radiation that can cause other materials to become radioactive. Free neutrons can penetrate very far into other materials, but hydrogen-rich things such as water or concrete can stop most of them within a meter or two. One thing that's clear here is that ionizing radiation can be extremely dangerous, but as with most things, the poison is in the dose. We're all absorbing small amounts of ionizing radiation all the time as energy from the sun and stars hits the Earth and as elements within the Earth decay. Radiation really is everywhere, but most of it will never be a problem for us. Ionizing radiation is measured in sieverts, which has to do with how much damage is likely over a given period of time at a given level of exposure. The instant dose, from either getting an airport security scan or from eating a banana due to its high levels of potassium, is about 0.1 microsieverts. If you use a cathode ray tube monitor or a CRT monitor for a year, you'll absorb about 1 microsievert. The average person receives about 10 microsieverts per day from all sources combined. A flight from New York to Los Angeles will expose you to about 40 microsieverts. Over the course of 1 year, living in a brick, stone, or concrete building, you'll absorb about 70 microsieverts. However, if you smoke a pack and a half of cigarettes a day, you'll add an additional 36,000 microsieverts, or 36 millisieverts, over the course of that year. However, lifetime cancer risk from radiation exposure doesn't come around until about 100,000 microsieverts over the course of 1 year, or 100 millisieverts, which is 1/10 of 1 sievert. 1 million microsieverts, 1,000 millisieverts, or one sievert over the course of an hour causes noticeable radiation sickness, while the absolutely fatal dose doesn't quite come around until 10 full sieverts are received in 1 hour. So if you're worried about your granite countertop or that bunch of bananas sitting on it, stop worrying. However, you might want to reconsider if you're smoking more than a pack a day or drinking Fukushima bottled water. I'm Dan Lombardo, and I hope you enjoyed this moment of science.
Yeah, someone might want to warn Ray Comfort about all that.
Bananas.
Yeah,
they're going to kill you.
Watch out for the bananas. I have to admit, I'm a little concerned that I'm going to get a bunch of emails about Fukushima now. I have to admit. We have an email, and this is Manuel from Colombia, who writes, "What is your definition of good and bad? Although I don't understand Nietzsche's writings very well, it seems to me that his definitions are that good is the same as rare and bad would mean the same as ordinary, or that good is whatever enhances the power of a being, and therefore it is relative. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this." I'm just going to go down the line. Go ahead, Bridget.
I actually don't use the terms good and bad or good and evil in terms of people. Like, everybody makes a decision, and everybody has the consequences of that decision. So, like, you know, if a starving person is stealing food, that's not, to me, a bad thing. You know, we want people to live, therefore eating is good, but stealing is bad. So I really try to avoid those sorts of terms when it comes to people, because it's all just a matter of consequences of your actions.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily use good and bad that much either. I use it as a relative term, though, because, like you said, that some things are communally good and communally bad.
Yeah.
So and I think about it on an evolutionary and societal norm as to which is the most beneficial to more than just one person, but more into society as far as good and bad.
Yeah, I think good and bad are descriptive terms that are meaningless when you don't have a noun that determines whether something is good for it or bad for it. You know, radiation is great. For, you know, radiation from plutonium and uranium is great if you're a nuclear power plant. It's less good if you're a radio show host. And, you know, so that's good and bad.
You know, you need radiation to live. That's
right.
I mean, sunlight.
True. Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. But, and yeah. Sunlight is good, but I don't know if you've taken a look at me recently, but I'm basically transparent. I need about 7 nanoseconds of sunlight. If I get any more than that, I start looking like bacon. So yeah, good and bad is totally relative, where good and evil are spiritual concepts.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are mystical concepts that belong with the, you know, with the tooth fairy and reading auras, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because you know, because evil suggests a malevolent entity, and evil was invented to basically kind of explain the Satan thing.
Yeah,
you know,
right. And to control people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tend not to use the term evil as much as possible. I mean, it is in our vernacular, so we're going to use it.
Yeah,
right.
But not in the same context as, say, the religious folks might use it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and oh boy, this is one I actually get a lot of pushback on, even from the atheism community. When I talk in these terms, there is not agreement among atheists on this one.
No.
But specifically with philosophers, I mean, Nietzsche spent a lot of time trying to talk about good and bad and beyond good and evil, you know, but he believed they existed and he had to get past them, and evil is a question that a lot of philosophers have, and for me, I'm like, I'm not against it, I'm just sort of orthogonal to it. I don't think there's a there.
No.
Right.
I think discussing evil is akin to discussing the Klingon language. I mean, it's right. It may be an interesting construct to talk about, but it has very little to do with reality.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's one I go off on. It's got another email. This is Alan from the internet, who write, "If I had a question, I guess it would be, what percent of atheists used to be believers? When I was at the Reason rally, I thought maybe 2/3, which would be 67%. As time goes on, it might be even higher. Let's just poll the room. We'll go around again."
Yeah, I was raised in a religious family. My dad's goal in life is to have a church in Hawaii. He runs a Bible study, and he does all of that sort of thing. And when I was young, I actually participated in an evangelical Christian theater company.
Oh, wow.
And I you know, it was what was expected. You know, I started before I could walk, you know, right. I played baby Jesus a couple of times, you know, and then as I got older, it was just sort of the expected thing to do. And I did it because it was fun. I got to be on stage. The spotlight was really great. But I do remember when I was about 12 years old and I had one of my auditions, the director said, okay, the stage is yours. You have 5 minutes to talk about your relationship with God. And I was like, can I just go off the stage?
Yeah.
And he was like, sure. And so I don't think it should have really come as a surprise to any of my family that I have become an atheist. And it was a really long journey for me to sort of disconnect, because it was such an important part of my life, and it was, you know, revolved around my entire family and all of that. So, yeah, I was definitely a believer, and it was a long road to become a non-believer. But, yeah, I think most of the people I know
I have to ask, why a church in Hawaii? Was Hawaii just cool, or was there some sort of spiritual reason you had to go to Hawaii?
My dad just really likes Hawaii.
Okay, yeah. That's good. I'm down with that.
Yeah, no, he really, really likes Hawaii.
How about you, Robert?
So, my grandfather was a Southern Baptist minister,
mm-hmm.
so there was a lot of religion in the family. However, my parents were I guess non-religious was a technical term. They never went to church.
Right.
But they would send me over to my grandparents' house, and if we were there on Sunday, you went to church.
Right.
But basically, I don't really think I was ever really a believer. I mean, I never really bought it, so I can't really say I was a believer. And it, you just go through the entire atheism search, through all the spirituals and yep. all the philosophies that you can find. So, to answer the question, no, I wasn't ever a believer.
Yeah. I grew up in a family with, I've talked about this before, but I grew up in a family with basically a religious detente. My mom was Christian. My father's side of the family is historically free thinking, which I didn't know about until after I came out as an atheist, that they've been non-religious for some time. But when I was in my teens, I fell for the God-shaped hole argument, because everybody, you know, at the time I was in the words of my family, trying to become less of an alien to people, because I kind of was. I was trying to figure out how to be like the humans. And one of the things that they've got is religion. So I figured, well, yeah. I don't have one. Maybe I should go get one. So I did the grand tour of religions. I read up on a lot of Eastern stuff. Yeah. Where I landed for a number of years was in that wacky New Age stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you quite a bit about it.
Crystals and all that.
Yeah. And but then I realized that what I was really doing there was more applied psychology and psyching myself up than thinking I've got mystical, magical energy. Yeah. So it was, and that's kind of how I got to atheism. I think the number sounds about right.
Yeah.
But that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. I'd like to thank Robert. Thank you very much. And and Bridget, I'm sorry. I'm tripping over things.
It's okay. Everybody forgets my name.
No, I didn't forget your name. I tripped over and said, whatever. I'd like to thank Nick Kennedy and Rebecca Witzman, Sean Duncan, Mike Warbington, Rebecca Friedman. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Voicemail us at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. If you're on the stream, stick around. We're going to talk a bit after the break. See you guys next week.
Yep.
I'm assuming we're off the air. I heard the Space Invaders KLAY in the background. Yeah. So, thank you. You really nice third segment, guys.
Yeah,
really nice. And not to say that you guys were pretty much good. You landed. You started out strong. So
thank you.
Yeah, I was really happy with the episode.
By the way, I don't know if you read the thing. I owe all of you beer.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
All right. I am okay with this. For those of you on the stream, we started the show and did about 2 minutes, and then Nick was like, "Wait, you're not live."
Pause warm.
Yeah. Yeah, but Sam, you ended up starting up the radio show like with maybe a half second delay.
Uh-huh.
It was like nothing ever happened. on the radio show.
Yeah, that comes with experience. I hope that the interview that we did, I really wanted to communicate that I loved the documentary.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was criticism born of it's not even criticism, because it wasn't criticism of the film. The film is great. I'm gonna have Mike watch it.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of high praise, because Mike's got taste.
Yeah, he does.
And but it was a disagreement about who Harold Camping was and his efficacy as a human being.
Right.
He makes a very strong point that Harold Camping is just putting a date on it.
Right.
But that a lot of Christians are looking forward to the destruction of...
Yeah.
A lot of Christians are looking forward to us being tortured.
Yes.
Right. Well, there's a fair portion that... that's why they're in favor of Israel having their own nation.
Right.
Because that's step one.
I love that. That's creepy. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to be in favor of you Jewish people so that you can go off to Israel and die. And
everybody dies.
And be tortured forever.
No, that's totally what my dad believes. Like, it's sort of creepy.
I actually subscribe to a magazine called Israel My Glory about that.
My dad gets that.
Yeah. Actually, they offered me a free 6-month subscription. Then they said, well, now you got to pay for it. And I said, no chance. And they keep sending it to me, so whatever.
Yeah. No, my dad actually pays for it.
Like, yeah.
He's all about it. He even has the Israel flag that he flies in his front yard.
So
it's weird.
I guess what I'm saying is when he says, you know, when he makes the point that a lot of Americans agree with him in purpose, if not in detail.
Yeah.
I would call them monsters, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
although I mean they're not asking for donations of millions of
and
dollars,
that's
a thing.
The way he played that scene where that guy is asking about money is brilliant.
It really was
really well done.
I thought it was great because it shows him as this sort of fallible, confused old man, and it's his followers' fault for believing in this like confused old man that I really like. I felt sympathy for him more than his followers.
Yeah,
I get the exact opposite.
Really,
I really felt that he was fleecing the people. I mean, I think the poor, deluded followers with their lives ruined.
They're the victims here.
Yeah, they're the victims. I see it as no different than a snake oil salesman, honestly.
Well, yeah.
Looking at it, there's
fault on both sides.
Right,
like,
I mean, there is.
If I were to encounter him on the street, you know, and he were to say this to me, I'd be like, okay, you're a crazy old man, let me make sure that you're in a safe place. Like, I think that anybody with
you'd put him in a padded room and give him lots of pudding.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
but we live in a culture that has been brought up for people to believe those people in that position because, you know, this guy's on the radio, he must know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Been on the radio
and here's the other side of it, and here's what I thought. I don't know if this... No, wait. I saw the rest of the documentary. I think he was going for this. Is when you are in a dispensationalist apocalyptic sect, which is what family radio and family radio's influence is, and he's the head of that. He is the apex of that. He's humble. He's personable. He's not out there. He's not Jimmy Swaggart. He's not Peter Popoff. He's not Uri Geller. You know, he's a true believer. That's one of the things that scares me.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing is, he's at the apex. The next rung higher in the hierarchy, and we're talking about a church or we're talking about a religion. Mm-hmm. So hierarchy is paramount. The next step up is God.
God. Yeah.
And so when you are saying that the world is ending on May 21st, and then you say, I'm really terrified. What do I do with all my money?
Yeah.
And you go, well, the world is ending, but you have to ask God.
Talk to God, yeah.
Right.
That's essentially saying...
Yeah.
Yeah. Spend all your money.
I have like really profound memories because I was teaching at the time that this was all happening, and one of my students came into my homeroom class in tears. She's, you know, 15, maybe 16 years old, just in tears. And I was like, what's wrong? And she's like, the world is ending on Saturday and I don't even know what to do, and I haven't even kissed a boy. And it just so happens that the boy that liked her was standing there, and I was like, do not go out and kiss the next boy that you see, guaranteed, like, you will regret that. And it took me about 3 days of like showing her lists of other failed, you know, rapture predictions and all of this to finally convince her that she wasn't going to die. Mm-hmm. And then the following Monday, it was like nothing had happened. It was like this week of like immense turmoil for this like 15-year-old girl. And then, no, the world's fine. Like,
I would.
But that kind of stuff is not just exclusive to Christianity. I mean, look at the 2012 thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that was, if I wanted to spend more time on the interview, I wanted to talk with him about that. Because this is a guy who's he may not be a scholar or whatever, but he's definitely an expert on this
stuff.
Right.
And I think we're kind of the same mind here, that apocalyptic thinking is a feature of humanity.
Right.
Which is what makes it a feature of religion.
Yeah.
That you know, we're going to get rid of. And that I would have liked to have spent more time on.
Yeah. Well, apocalyptic thinking is definitely culture. I mean, how many movies do we have that are apocalyptic in nature?
Armageddon and all of,
I mean, even the zombie movies, it's all apocalyptic.
Yeah. And this is, I'm on what I call an apocalypse-free diet. I don't think it's not unknown that I have some brain wrong. And,
that's such a nice way of saying it, Sam. Yes.
apocalyptic movies really get me down.
Oh.
They really do.
Yeah.
And so when I finally realized that this whole apocalyptic thing was actually emotionally affecting me, I said, okay, I'm going cold turkey. As much as I love it, I stopped, and honestly, I've been a little happier ever since. Yeah. Much like Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah,
my daughter's kind of the same way with apocalyptic movies. We love to watch them just because they're fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, the youngest one, she's like, I really don't want to watch that again.
Well, I did make an exception for 2012 because it was hilarious. I mean, it was so over the top and stupid that it was unbelievable.
I haven't seen it.
It was un-freaking believable.
Yeah.
And that's like another one is Adventure Time. That's another post-apocalyptic piece of fiction that I still read because it's the apocalypse was a really long time ago. The world's
rocket ships haven't been reinvented yet.
Yeah. And things are clearly okay. There are still people. They're made out of candy, but there're still people. Yeah. And so I'm cool. I'm good, you know. And that's where it comes down to. And I was talking about this with Becky, and I made a point that she really liked, which I should make, which is, to me, this is sort of the anti-Kumare, if you've seen that documentary.
Oh, yeah. That's a great...
That I would do a showing. I love that documentary.
Yes.
And I was so fearful of it because I thought that this guy was going to make fun of people.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't.
No.
And I liked that.
Yeah.
And here's a situation where Zeke did the same thing in a way, and I didn't like it. That doesn't say anything about Zeke.
Yeah.
That says something about me. I totally own that. And I think I'm right because I'm a radio show host and I've got that whole ego thing going on.
Yeah, ego. Yeah.
Well, we have to listen to radio show hosts because they know everything.
You have no idea how much that terrifies me. You really, I don't want people to think I'm authoritative on anything.
Don't worry, we don't.
Okay, good.
It's okay. Yeah.
You're good.
Fine, Sam.
Good,
a bit sarcastic. Yeah. That's kind of what I do.
I know people are joking, but there's always that it's that haha only serious thing.
Because
I've had really terrifying conversations that people might not have realized how terrified I was during them. It's like, wow, this is a side of me I did not that is expressing itself through a conversation with you that I did not want to know about.
Yeah.
You know? <It's> But I like being on the radio, so I enjoy talking. So
it's fun because, like, growing up on stage, I don't, you know, I haven't done that in so long.
Yeah,
that it's nice, and then without the pressure of the
it's me too. You know, My family has a strong, I mean, we're basically all purveyors of nihilistic entertainment at this point. My uncle's a stand-up comedian, a bunch of musicians in my family, I'm a talk show host. Performance is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I value the ability to perform.
Yeah.
You know, and wow, this tangented. But yeah, I really enjoyed the documentary, and it told a story that I didn't think would get told.
Yeah. Right?
And
it was very human.
He made me give, in my head, I didn't say it in the radio because I, whatever. So I'm saying it now.
Yeah.
He did apologize.
Yeah, he did apologize.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either.
Yeah.
I didn't either. Like, that was a really profound moment for me.
Yeah.
Like, watching the documentary. Like, I was at work watching it, and I actually had to stop, and, like, I went back a little bit, and I watched it again, and I was like, that really happened. Like, wow.
and sort of the emotional load of that 2012 interview.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really well done. And, yeah. But it's... We do have a disagreement, but we're both. This is what we do,
right?
We're allowed to disagree, and I'm actually glad that we do, because then we have conversations like this,
right?
So
I felt really more upset for, like, his daughter and his wife.
What is up with his daughter?
Okay, I get it, because I had a really profound sort of person come into my life early in my formative years that was able to sort of dissuade me from just following in my dad's footsteps blindly. But my dad is one of those people that does, he believes that the world is going to end, and he is very concerned with the state of our souls right now. To be able to get away from that as an adult has been really helpful for me. But I had Dan come into my life early, and so I was able to sort of step away from that, and she clearly did not have that, and so she's fallen into this without having any hope.
I did wonder if does she have a family of her own, or is she just like an adjunct to the camping prime family?
Yeah. Right.
And because it felt like she was just an attendant to her parents.
Yeah. Right.
And that, I was like, yeah, she has no escape.
Yeah.
I call it the Andy Schlafly effect. Andy Schlafly, son of Phyllis Schlafly, runs with Conservapedia, where he says that being an atheist means you get fat. Which he might be right about. Right, take a look.
Seriously.
I disagree, but...
I comedic purposes. Yes.
I don't know. I've put on a few pounds in the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Since I came out, so...
I'm actually...
In a completely different direction, is there a post-show today?
Yes, there is a post-show. It is at the Tap Room.
Harmon.
Yeah, it is at the Tap Room.
Thank you.
No problem. We're done talking about now that we're in more than one state, saying, hey, after the show, come have a drink with us. Get on a plane and come have a drink with us. That's kind of mean.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing that anymore.
I'm going to start tearing this stuff down. I will see you guys in a bit.
See you in a bit.
Cool.
Yeah, this was a really good palate cleanser for last week, too.
Yeah,
like, this
definitely.
Was fun. This was good.
Yeah.
I liked the conversation we had, and there was no rage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is good.
Because I've still been raging all week over...
Yeah.
Over everything.
Yeah, that's not over.
It's not over.
That's not over by a long shot.
No.
And it's the Hobby Lobby decision has really... And actually, if you're still listening to this, I would really like some opinions and pointers, anything you think you need to say about this. I really want to hear about it at this point, because I'm rethinking some of our political stance on the show. Because we've tried to take a politically neutral stance on the show. I don't want to talk about gun control. I don't want to talk about healthcare. That doesn't mean anything to religion. That doesn't mean anything to atheism. Well, it could mean something to religion if you're David Koresh, but with the Hobby Lobby decision, I have to...
It's blurring the lines.
It's blurring the lines, and I have to admit that it's the marriage of conservatism and fundamentalism that allowed Hobby Lobby to take place.
Yep.
I don't have a I don't have a problem with people with their economic politics. I'm not too, you know, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But now, because of what happened in the last 30 years, we've got this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We don't live in a country with a First Amendment.
Right.
We don't.
Not
anymore. We just don't.
At least not if you're female.
Right. No, well, that's the thing, is it's more, it's already more than just gender.
Yeah,
it's already, true. It's already broken through the barrier. There's a news story we did this week about somebody getting kicked out of a college because she's a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
Wheaton College, which is a seminary in my old stomping grounds, they're going to stop giving, they're not going to admit gay people. They're not going to give gay people their partners, insurance. This is already, the minute this, they knew this was going to open the floodgates. They,
yep.
This whole, it was a narrow decision, was
yep.
was completely stupid, because in the opposition, the minority one, she's like, yeah, this is going to freaking destroy everything. You guys do know this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and look.
Yeah, I read that, the first part of the decision that Scalia put out, and the first thing I said is, well, now they can fire homosexuals because it's religiously based.
Yeah.
Yep. And like, the girl that was kicked out of her program, a semester away from graduation, she gets kicked out because she got married to another woman.
Yeah.
Well, like, and there's, at the moment, no federal protections for homosexuals.
Mm-mm. No.
I mean, they're not a protected class.
Nope.
No matter what people say, they are not a protected class.
Yeah.
Oh, there's that conversation. What protected class means.
Right.
There is a conversation that I'd want to choke and die on. You know, a little bit of my politics are fairly well known. I mean, if you follow me on Facebook, I do not hold back there. But
right.
that's not what Ask an Atheist is for.
No. Right.
And so I need to find where Ask an Atheist needs to be to have that conversation. And
yeah.
and what I'm saying right now is, I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, I guess as long as you're combining it with the religious influence, it still applies, even though, I mean, because the problem is that the religion and politics have sort of combined on this issue,
right. yeah.
and it's impossible to separate them.
Yeah.
Like, because they've
made it
that way.
Well, it has been for centuries.
Well, yeah, but more so lately. Like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah, there has
least,
been...
At least in America.
There has been emerging that should not happen
right.
because of our rule set, but
right.
we do live in a context where laws are not laws.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They're suggestions.
Right.
And I could go on about that for a while.
Forever.
Well, I think... I'm boiling again, so I'm going to turn on the air conditioner. It means this train is coming to an end. I think I'm going to tack this on the end of the episode.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. See you guys next week.
All right.
Bye. Cool.